Hello and welcome to another episode of Juicebox Music Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter McClamrock. On the other line, building a tunnel from Zurich to New York, it's Nicholas Moreau.
What's up, Hunter? Welcome back stateside.
I'm back. I'm over the jet lag.
Are you?
I think I had a flight, got in really early in the morning, which was so annoying because I needed to stay up.
Yeah.
I managed to stay up till 7:30, and my whole goal was to sleep till 6 a.m. the next day. I figured I'd be golden if I could pull that off,
sure.
And I slept till 6:45.
Nice.
I'm back.
Nice.
I'm rejuvenated.
Awesome.
Getting the Nescafe out of my veins, you know?
Drinking some Stumptown or Blue Bottle?
What do you Counterculture, my friend.
Counterculture, oh. Durham, North Carolina.
Durham, North Carolina's finest. Delivered straight to my door. They want to sponsor the podcast. I'll talk more about them. They should really do that. Counterculture, yeah. Where you at? Hit us up, juiceboxmusicpod@gmail.com.
All we want is free bags of coffee. We don't want any money.
You can pay us in coffee.
Yeah.
Everybody else, ratings, reviews on iTunes. Let's hear it.
You know the drill. Come on, guys. Let's do it.
So
5 stars, just a nice little word. Share it, subscribe, take your phone, your colleague's phone at this point. You've done all your family members. Now walk around the office.
Move on to the workplace.
Yeah, and just start hitting subscribe on people's phones. It's not creepy.
It's not weird at all.
No.
If you need to, while they're napping during their lunch break, just take their thumb and put it on top of the sensor. And it's just what people do in 2018, I figured, you know, if you're working in an office.
It's fine.
Yeah. So we're here, World Cup's happening, music is still happening, the life is still happening somehow.
Yeah. Surprised we made it this far.
We made it this far. Since I last talked to you, have you gone to any shows or anything?
Yep. Funny you asked. I went to a show, I think it was Thursday. We're recording this on a Sunday, July 1st. On Thursday, I went to go see the Horrors at Wonder Ballroom in Portland, Oregon. One of my favorite bands. I've seen them twice before. Twice? Yeah. And once was at the Fonda Theater in L.A., and once was at Coachella a couple of days later.
I remember that show at the Fonda Theater. I think I saw you shortly before you went to that, right?
Yeah, you went to the Wild Beasts that night, and I went to see the Horrors.
Right.
I remember your roommate at the time made a batch of brownies that were pretty special.
Shouts to Dominic.
Dominic, thanks very much. And he told me to just eat a little bit, and then he told me to eat a little more, and turned out to be a great idea. but yeah, the Horrors were great at the Fonda. They were great at Coachella when I saw them. That was the first year that Coachella did 2 weekends. So when I saw them at the Fonda, and you saw Wild Beast, it was when they had those shows in the middle in LA, which were always fun. And then, you know, since this was on, they were touring on Skying, which was their third album. So then they put out Luminous, the fourth album, which I thought was really good too, and announced the North America tour that they canceled.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I had tickets for the Portland show, and they canceled the North America tour without any explanation and never rebooked a tour. They just kind of went dark on that album and didn't really tour on it. And then the fifth album called Five, or V, Roman numeral, came out last year. And no tour was announced for that until this year.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, are these the first stateside dates that the Horrors have done in support of Five?
I believe so, or they've done, like, New York, L.A., you know? But this is the first, like, actual tour. And it feels so long since this album, I mean, basically a year. And they haven't toured much around the world, you know, before that, on support of this album. And the reason I'm bringing all this up in this preamble is, you know, when I saw them at the Fonda, that show was sold out. And the Fonda is, I think, probably a little bigger than the Wonder Ballroom here in Portland. And this show was half empty.
Hmm.
And I think that it was just really hurt their kind of popularity to have that long break between tours, at least in Portland or around
here. And
they're
here. Kind of a band. I remember when they first came out, and what was the name of that first record? I wasn't a big fan of it. It was kind of they hadn't really started writing proper songs at that point. It was kind of a gothy, noisy record, but they built a reputation based on their live show. Like, mm-hmm. I remember them I was living in Boston at the time, they came through and played at Great Scott, which is a great venue in Austin. And it was kind of like, it was a buzzy, buzzy show. Like, people were talking about it. Their band had this great, like, dark energy. They actually ended up breaking an Elvis bust that was in the venue, and they're banned for life from that venue.
Mm-hmm.
Which may be a problem now if their crowds get smaller, if they're going to have to play smaller venues. But I just remember them, their live reputation was kind of the thing when they first came out.
Yeah, it was Strange House, right, was the album. And that was kind of, it's funny because a lot of people think about The Horrors and they think about Primary Colors as the first real album. But the album before that, Strange House, was kind of under weirder, noisier side, I would say.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so the show itself was amazing. Like, every song, I mean, they sounded so good, and the songs off of Five sound so good live. And that album has really grown on me as one of my favorite of theirs. I like it. I think Skying is my favorite, but just as much as Skying probably. But it was weird. The crowd was, you know, mid-30s to low-40s,
mm-hmm.
mid-30-year-olds to, you know, and...
aged crowd, a maturing crowd.
Yeah, I was telling my friend, I was like...
11 years old now?
Yeah. I was thinking, like, this could be the same crowd as a Guided by Voices show.
Right, what you're not seeing them picking up younger fans
and
with subsequent releases.
And that was what was weird, is that, you know, when The Horrors put out Primary Colors, the people that went to that show were 25-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that music, like Five, you know, is not too different than Primary Colors in the style of music, but it's not attracting 25-year-olds.
I would say it's interesting, too, with their latest work. I mean, I would say Five is unquestionably the most kind of outwardly commercial album that they've made.
Oh,
right?
For sure. So the singles are so poppy.
Yeah, so they're like kind of pop anthems, but they also appeal to that same kind of age group, because they're kind of like big, like late 80s sounding goth pop songs.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could liken it to The Cure or like Depeche Mode, kind of. But a little more swirly, a little more like The Cure, I think, with the swirling like guitars and psychedelic sound. And I think that age group is also kind of into that. They kind of got into that in their early 20s, because that was what was big back then, too. And so they're kind of keeping up with the crowd that they have. But maybe those new ears are not finding those songs somehow. I think the Five was a really, really good album. But I never heard anybody talking about it, really.
No, nobody talked about it.
You know, and the end of the year came around and it wasn't on lists very often or anything like that. And to me, they're the kind of band, like I mentioned, I was not a big fan of Strange House, and I've really liked, there's a couple songs of Primary Colors that I thought were great. And each release since then, I've kind of liked more and more. I don't know if Five would necessarily be my favorite album of theirs, but it at least, like, I thought the songwriting keeps getting stronger and sharper. And, you know, they seem like a band, like Arctic Monkeys were kind of from the same period, that got better and better, some would say, with each album, and their audience grew, and it hasn't happened for them. And a lot of it, I think you're right, has to come down, especially in the US. You got to tour, you got to continue to keep a presence up. It's a big deal.
Yeah. And it also made me think about how, you know, music is a moment in time. And so, like, those tastes, you know, especially in younger listeners, tastes just change, you know. And what was appealing about The Horrors in 2008, 2009, maybe isn't appealing to a 25-year-old today, you know, 10 years later.
Yeah.
So the show was great. It was heavy on skying, and they had a little bit of primary colors and luminous, and obviously a lot of five. But I would recommend, if you guys get a chance to see them in your town. I know they're touring right now. I think you were saying they're playing LA tonight.
They're playing LA tonight. It's, I'd say, a venue a little bit smaller than the Fonda, but it is sold out, very sold out. So
yeah,
they're a band. I think they'll probably always have fans here. LA loves goth pop forever. It's kind of a perpetual genre. They'll never go out of style here.
Yeah, I mean, Depeche Mode plays like four nights in a row at a stadium here, so it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so anyway, the show was great. The stage presence was really nice. You know, one thing I wondered, though, which was, I hope I'm not right, but part of me, while I was watching the show, wondered if this is the last time I'm going to see them.
Like, you think they're just kind of running out of steam? Or, like, you would buy a ticket if they came back, right?
I would, but I don't know if they would necessarily come back to Portland itself.
Right.
And two, I don't know that, you know, I'm glad to hear the LA show sold out, but, like, if every other show that is not LA is as full as the one I was at, it would feel a little discouraging to me. And seeing how they've kind of not really supported their albums in the way most bands do from a touring perspective, I just wonder if, you know, they would get a little fed up or just discouraged by this current attendance.
Yeah, well, that'll be at least something to look out for. I'm definitely, you know, looking forward to a new album. I don't know if that's going to be coming out anytime soon. There's a lot of side projects with that band too, I notice. Mm-hmm. So yeah, who knows? I think they could go either way right now.
Yeah, but please check them out. Let's keep them up a beat in band and touring.
Yeah, definitely check out the most recent album if you kind of checked out with the Horrors years ago, and they kind of seem like a relic of you know, the first decade of the 2010s. They're making some really good records lately, to middling success, yeah, at least here in the States. And they're a good band.
Yeah.
I saw kind of a, I would say, very different experience than the one you're talking about. It's been like a week and a half ago or so now, but I managed to catch the last show of LCD Sound System's American Dream Tour. Which,
that's right,
seems like it's been going on forever, but I guess they did that reunion tour and then they put out the new album and then they kept touring behind the album. So it, you know, I don't know, this tour is probably like a year and a half long, but seems like they've been on the road for 3 years or so.
How was it?
It was cool. Like, I actually didn't know until that day that it was their final show of the whole tour. It was the third of a 3-night stand in Lisbon. And they played for almost 3 hours. Like an hour and 20 minute long set. And then they went off for an encore and they came back for another encore and another encore. And James Murphy had hinted that they were going to play a lot of music that night, but it was an interesting atmosphere because you could see there's a lot of members kind of the road crew that were on stage drinking wine during the show. And, you know, a lot of them, it was kind of emotional, a lot of hugs going around, and, you know, these people who had kind of been living in each other's space for however long they've been on the road, kind of bidding farewell. And you could see they had a lot of affection for the city of Lisbon and everything like that. And the audience was very, very appreciative. It was a complete sweat box.
Yeah.
I haven't been that sweaty at a show. And people there, like I talked about in an earlier podcast, you know, they're not like dancing like maniacs and getting all over your space. It's a very, very respectful crowds, but just so hot inside that room. But it was great. I was glad to see them. I hadn't seen them perform any of those new songs live. I guess I hadn't seen them since we saw them at FYF a few years ago.
Yeah.
And always a fun experience. They're getting older, they're getting wiser, but you know, it's always fun. They just, their shows are like parties always.
Yeah, they're so good. I don't think you could see them and not have a good time.
And he did mention that they were going to go make another album now, so to look forward to. Who knows? He takes his time with that kind of stuff, so.
Yeah, but he also broke up once, so.
I don't think they're going to be breaking up again anytime soon. The cash is really, he's got to support that wine bar he's got in Brooklyn, you know? Those things are not serious money makers. You have to, you want to make $1 million with a wine bar, you got to start with two.
Yeah, it's a flavor of love, a labor of love, sorry.
Flavor of Love was flavor a great show, though. Great show. Shout outs to Flavor Flav, one time Durham resident.
I saw him once in D.C. at the Capitol. He was with his son. And,
just visiting?
Yeah, I was with some friends and my now wife, and we were visiting D.C., and I was like, from afar, I was like, who is this guy who thinks he's Flavor Flav with his clock around his neck? And then I got close, I was like, oh, shit, it's Flavor Flav.
I mean, you're like, that can't just be, that's not Flavor Flav.
Like,
really?
There's no way he dresses like that in public. You know, but
I don't think that's a character.
Nope. Lo and behold. Anyway, that was Flavor of Love.
Flavor of Love was a moment in time.
Yeah.
Speaking of flavors.
Yeah.
What is the flavor for this week on our show? What's the record we're going to talk about, Nick?
Well, I think we should talk about this small band, this small indie band called Gorillaz.
That
put out an album called The Now, but before this I just wanted to mention another small indie band that put out a release that we haven't talked about.
Oh,
it's a small band called Nine Inch Nails.
Never heard of them.
Yeah, they're started in Cleveland, Ohio by Trent Reznor, but anyway,
Trent,
they put out he like won an Oscar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
he's one of those.
Check out his work anyway. they released an EP called Bad Witch, which is, I think, the third EP of this, like, EP collection they were doing.
Yes, we talked about this before on the podcast. You have a fascination with Trent Reznor's bottom line on the vinyl sales of these EPs.
I do, because it's genius. I mean, he's putting three EPs out in 18 months and basically charging the price of a regular LP, and they're selling out. So it's amazing, you know? And I think, you know, we laugh about this, but if you look at the CP, you look at what Kanye is doing with those 7-track albums. It's half the work for just as much money.
Well, Trent Reznor was recently disparaging Kanye in the pages of Vanity Fair, this interview he gave, accusing Kanye and The Weeknd of ripping off Nine Inch Nails live shows, which I thought was pretty rich.
Yeah.
I got to read the rest of that profile, but yeah, he was real salty about it.
Yeah, I heard about it. I haven't read the article, but I'd love to read. I haven't seen I've never seen Kanye or The Weeknd, so I can't tell. But I've seen Nine Inch Nails.
I think both Kanye and The Weeknd have worked with the same lighting and production designers that work with Nine Inch Nails. So, I mean, I don't know if you can just call it complete ripping off, but we can examine that another time.
Yeah. But anyway, this EP, Bad Witch, 6 tracks. As the three releases, which I liked mostly all of the first two, this is to me the best one. I don't know if you had a chance to check it out.
I haven't yet, but it's definitely on my list. I've read some good things about it. I'm really curious to hear it.
Definitely to me the best of the three. And if you liked any of the last two EPs they released, this is a great one. And then they're having quite a tour coming up, including a date in LA I'd like to go to, Hunter.
The Palladium?
The Palladium with the Soft Moon opening, I believe.
I think they're playing 5 shows at the Palladium.
The but Soft I don't know Moon,
if
the
it's
Jesus
a different
name.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Nine Inch Nails. So, yeah, I don't know how I'm going to swing that one, but I'd like to go.
I haven't paid that close of attention to these EPs as they've come out, but in terms of like a live proposition, I will always be down to see Nine Inch Nails live. They're just one of the best live bands of definitely of their generation.
Yeah, we saw them about a year ago.
Yeah.
And that was when the second EP dropped. So there's been a year between the second and now the third. And they were great live. And you remember they did that? They did a great Bowie cover.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Lazarus they covered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just really good. Anyway, if you're a fan of Nine Inch Nails, I'm sure you've checked it out already. If you have a slight interest in Nine Inch Nails, just check out the EP. It's really, really worth it.
It's a good time to dip back in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Cool. Well, yeah, I'll check that out. I'll let you know what I think about it this week. I heard that they've been doing a cover of I'm Afraid of Americans, that David Bowie song that Trent Reznor, I don't know if he was on the track or he just appeared in the video, but it was around, I think it was on his album Outside, and that was the tour that they did together. It was like I'm pretty sure Bowie might have been opening for Nine Inch Nails on a lot of those days. That is crazy. But
he was. My friend, actually, that you know here, Daniel, tells me a story all the time. Shout out Daniel. His biggest regret, he lived in Louisiana, and he was 15 at the time of that tour, I think. And he told me the day before, he had tickets for one of those shows in New Orleans. And the day before the show, he skipped school and got caught and got grounded and didn't go to the show for Bowie opening for Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, that's one of those things that you're just going to have to learn to live with. Sorry, Daniel.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm happy to talk about Gorillaz now.
All right. Well, yeah, so Gorillaz, this is the biggest virtual band in the world. Collaboration between singer-songwriter Damon Albarn and the artist Jamie Hewlett. Their sixth album, sixth full-length album. Following shortly, like only a year ago, that Humans came out, which was their fifth one. And man, this is a very different record from that one, don't you think?
Oh, for sure.
I kind of thought we were going to be dealing with Humans B-sides, basically, on this record. And Humans, I thought, was not only the worst Gorillaz album or the weakest Gorillaz album, but one of the weakest, if not the weakest, full-length album, I think, in Damon Albarn's career. So I was happy to say that this record is quite a different experience than that one.
Yeah, I mean, it could only be go up from there, right? Humans, to be honest, I listened to it once or twice, and then I just never went back to it. I couldn't. I liked the Vince Staples song a little bit, but it was just features the whole time.
Yeah, I was super hyped about it when it came out, so I really wanted to like it, and I kept listening to it nonstop. And then when they finally came around touring, and I got to see them live, it was the first and only time I've ever seen them live. I busted it out again to get ready for those shows. It made the live shows, that stuff went over better live, especially if they had the collaborators there with them. But it was so overstuffed with features, and you know, that's not the most appealing part of Gorillaz to me, but I think Damon Albarn might think so based on Feel Good Inc. being, you know, the biggest song of their career and what really made them a big deal in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I have a theory about Damon. You know, he's a guy who's accomplished so much in music and continues to make really good music far past most of his peers. But I think he has a real chip on his shoulder about this U.S. success thing. From going to see him live for Blur in the U.S. A couple times to reading interviews with him. And, you know, so if you don't know, Damon Albarn was the frontman for the British rock band Blur, who are still kind of together in various ways after a reunion a few years ago. But they achieved kind of a one hit wonder status in the U.S. with the song Song 2 off their 1997 self-titled album, which is a song that is played pretty much at every sporting event around the world, right? This is the woohoo song.
Also, the main title song for the video game FIFA 98.
Yeah. Okay. For FIFA 98, all your FIFA heads out there. But that never really translated into like huge commercial success for them like they have in the UK and in Europe. They've always kind of remained a big cult band over here. And Gorillaz was kind of the thing, the project that made, that really achieved mainstream success in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also, you know, I find Damon Albarn fascinating because I think, you know, there's a lot of artists, you know, Blur, if you aren't too familiar with them, because like Hunter just mentioned, you know, they didn't have the success that they have in Europe, but they are huge in Europe. Mm-hmm. Blur is huge, and they're huge in the U.S., but not to that level. And I think out of those, that crop of musicians, I mean, you put Blur in the same class as Oasis, Radiohead, you know, all those bands from that time, you know, Damon Albarn might be the most successful of the crop in terms of how many different projects he has that are just really big. I mean, Gorillaz and Blur are just monsters. And then he has other side projects that are all, you know, successful in their own way.
He should be putting out another record with The Good, Bad, and the Queen, their second album, I don't know, well over 10 years on from the first one later this year.
And that was a great, great album.
Yeah.
And I have to say, like, the man is very talented. Like he is also very prolific, which is usually don't always. I mean, talented people don't always put out a lot of stuff.
He is super fascinating, really prolific. Kind of seems like he goes to the studio every day and writes and records music. And you know, it's very rare that. I almost never have I heard a Damon Albarn song in any capacity in any of his projects and like thought it was a bad song. Mm-hmm. Like even the most middling of his work kind of is interesting to me and how he translates. And he's worked in opera before. He does a lot of work with musicians in Africa and Mali and has a record label that Honest John's that puts out a lot of world music, particularly African music. So you can kind of follow him across all these different genres and then, you know, go back to Blur for kind of the origin of it all. So this is the now. What are your initial impressions of this record?
You know, this album came out, is it Friday?
Yeah, a few days ago.
Yeah, just a few days ago. I've listened to it a bunch since then. I really like this record. I was thinking about, you know, it might be my favorite Gorillaz album is Plastic Beach, and it's definitely number two, if not number one.
I go between Plastic Beach and Demon Days. I think Demon Days is kind of the accepted best Gorillaz album, but I'm kind of with you. I think. I really enjoy like the melodicism on Plastic Beach and kind of like the whole tone of it. It's really memorable. And even the concept of it, which is kind of a environmental crisis, mm-hmm. You know, tale concept record is, I thought it goes down fairly easy in terms of the way a lot of those records are.
Yeah.
I ask you, I mean, does this sound like a Gorillaz album to you, or does this sound like a Damon Albarn solo album?
I was just about to say that. To me, it does not sound like a Gorillaz album. And the funny thing is that it comes after Humans, which we just mentioned had every track had a feature.
Or two or three.
And they were all like people, you know, they weren't like all these people. I mean, it's kind of astounding how Damon Albarn was able to get all these people on that record. And the now has only two tracks with features. And you know, there's only 11 tracks. I like the brevity of it too. I think sometimes, you know, Gorillaz albums are just have a lot of songs.
They can be completely stuffed.
Yeah. And
Humans was just to an extreme with that. They had a ton of tracks too, and they put out a deluxe edition that had like eight extra songs. Yeah, it was crazy.
But I like that the features use Snoop Dogg, which to me was a great feature on Plastic Beach, right? And the George Benson feature on the track Humility. It does, you know, it's funny because it feels like a Damon Albarn solo record a little bit, but it reminded me of Angles from the Strokes. I know you didn't listen to it as much as I have. I think you mentioned in a previous episode, but you know, there's some songs that sound a little strokey from that period to me. But this is one of the only Gorillaz albums that I listen from start to finish every time.
Yeah, I mentioned the solo album thing because, well, for a couple different reasons. One, it sounds like a Damon Albarn solo album with no, you know, with a lack of features and kind of him taking control. He was kind of in the background a lot on Humans. Mm-hmm. But it's billed as a solo album from Damon's character in Gorillaz 2D. I just read about this that I thought was interesting and makes a lot of sense. But what I'm wondering, you know, he put out his first official solo album about 3 years ago, maybe now, called Everyday Robots, before mm-hmm. Humans came out. And it was, you know, I think I thought it was a really solid album. It was very kind of languid with the tempo. And I don't think he had, you know, any of the singles really did much on the radio or anything like that. And I'm wondering if, rather than put out a second Damon Albarn solo album and kind of do a Damon Albarn tour, he can release that solo album with a little bit of that, especially like the synth sound and the production that you're kind of used to with Gorillaz, and just call it a Gorillaz album and be able to play festivals and a lot bigger venues. And, you know, they're doing a Gorillaz festival outside of Los Angeles in October. You know, these are kind of the things that he can't do even with Blur in the States. You know, Blur on their reunion album, The Magic Whip, only played two U.S. dates, which were large, at Madison Square Garden in New York and the Hollywood Bowl here. And he lamented from the stage that the Hollywood Bowl wasn't sold out. So I know this chip on his shoulder is very real with this stuff. Yeah. And, you know, my brother happened to see him at a date on his solo tour, and I think it was like a, you know, non-sold out venue. So economically, it probably makes a lot more sense to put out a Gorillaz album.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, distribution-wise, I think a Gorillaz album is going to be reaching a lot more people. But I was, you know, I have to say, after Humans, I could have taken a break for another one, you know? Like,
yeah, me too.
And when the Now Now was announced, I was like, man, like, I guess it could only be better than Humans. And this is like, it's deep and surprisingly like really good. But I never thought about this actually since Friday, so only 2 days. But I never thought about this as a Damon Albarn solo album. But now that you mention it, like, it doesn't really have the kind of typical Gorillaz shtick that most of the albums do.
Yeah, to me, it kind of sounds like if, like, also, like songs that could be Gorillaz B-sides, like from the Humans era, even though I think he recorded this album all, like, very quickly in a small amount of time, wrote the songs quickly. And I don't mean that to say that the songs are worse than the songs on Humans, because I think it's a lot better of a record than Humans also. Mm-hmm. But it's like if he took all the party songs and all the songs overstuffed with features that, you know, how it's usually more of a mixed bag in a Gorillaz album, and just used all those on Humans and then used all the kind of melancholic, kind of sad, wistful, that kind of side mm-hmm. to his songwriting, which is, you know, a really big part of what Damon Albarn, I think, does so well, and just mm-hmm. save that all for one album.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It does feel a little bit like B-sides, but, you know, probably not B-sides.
I mean, he's such a good songwriter that his B-sides are, you know, those kind of tracks that he just can write with no real thinking at all are usually going to be good. Especially if it's just him. Like, I don't need to hear, like, three rappers on a song unless it's necessary for that song.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think the Snoop Dogg one is really good, because it's short. It's to the point, you know, that song Hollywood. I think when I was listening to it, I was like, I bet Snoop Dogg just walked into the studio and tried a few different verses about Hollywood, and they was like, yep, that one. And, you know, it feels like it was just, like, super easy for Snoop Dogg to do, because you can relate to it. to talk about Hollywood being dead. So in that vein, you know, it felt like it's very genuine. You know, it's coming from the heart, and that's what I like about it. It's very intimate in a way.
Did you ever listen to the record they did in between Plastic Beach and Humans, which is an album he recorded completely on his iPad called The Fall?
I never did. You know, yes. I was wondering. When you were talking about six, I was like, man, I count only five. And now you're right. I remember that album. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, this feels a little bit like just a more fleshed out version of that one. That is an interesting album that I never really put on or have a desire to listen to, because I'd rather just listen to Plastic Beach or Demon Days. But it was a very intimate kind of personal thing. This is more produced and just a more realized album. I like the brevity, like you talk about. I feel like the sounds on it, and I think I might be thinking of this album a little bit cynically, just in terms of its purpose. Because I also I've seen quotes from him recently saying that they needed a reason to go on tour. So I think he's really interested in whatever Gorillaz is becoming as a live entity. And their show that I saw last year was really fantastic. Even just touring on the heels of Humans. But, I think that's why it kind of has this tossed off B-side quality, but I like that about it. I can't say it would challenge Plastic Beach or Demon Days for me as being, one of their top albums, but it's a really nice collection of songs that I think, people who really like Damon Albarn are going to like, but in terms of a casual Gorillaz fan that just knows like Dare and Feel Good Inc. and, some of their hits, I don't know if they're going to find too much to love on it.
Yeah, I don't think there's really a radio hit here. Maybe Humility or Hollywood. But other than that, I don't think there's really a radio hit. Hey, I wanted to talk about the back half of the album. I kind of fell in love, so on my first listen, I fell in love with the album when on the back half, like kind of starting at Lake Zurich and on, which is track 7.
Lake Zurich is a really cool song.
Yeah, I really liked it. And it reminded me of the Glitter Freeze from Plastic Beach, kind of just an instrumental song.
Mm-hmm.
And that I really liked as well. I think that back half is really strong. And then it made me re-listen to it. And now I just listen to it from track 1 to 11, just over and over.
Yeah, there's nothing. It's hard for me to say that there's anything I don't like on it. I like all the songs from it. It just, there's sort of an inconsequential feeling of it all to me. Like, it doesn't, it's not something that I feel like I'm just going to keep coming back to.
Really? I feel like I'm going to be listening to this for a while. We talked recently, you and I, about we're doing an episode about our top 10 of the mid-year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if I had more time with this, I think it'd be on there.
Well, I kind of want to talk, pitch another record to you from this week, Nick.
Okay.
I was listening to this album, and then I've been listening to another release that came out the same day. Sorry, it's not Scorpion by Drake. I just don't have time to listen to all 20,000 tracks that are on that album yet. I'll just let it seep into my consciousness just from being alive in the world today. That's how Drake albums usually work.
Yeah.
But I was listening to this other album and I was like, well, maybe Gorillaz isn't the best. Gorillaz the Now isn't the best Gorillaz record that came out this week. And what I mean by that is like an album that works within traditional pop music, but feels a little bit like it's boundary pushing and a little bit different, but also has sort of mainstream aspirations.
Are you getting excited now?
It's the sophomore release by Let's Eat Grandma.
Oh,
This week. And I was riding pretty hard for them with their first record, I Gemini, and some people kind of thought I was crazy. These are, I think at the time they were both 16 or 17 when that record came out, and they're about like, like right around 18 now. This is a duo from England that I actually got to see at Primavera Sound this year in Barcelona. And they basically took all the high moments off their first record and made an album that every song is on the level of like the best three songs on the first one, and then it going even higher from there. Really like this album. It's very like, say the first half of it is very oddball pop, and then the second half the songs kind of stretch out and get a little more experimental, and it's unbelievable the progression to me from their first album to the second album. And knowing, like, similar to Lindsay from Snail Mail that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, who is, you know, barely an adult, they're making some mind-blowing music.
Yeah.
And playing a lot of instruments, and, you know, vocally it's kind of similar to they sing together a lot, and the overall impression I have is like a very drunk Lord singing, like like the artist Lord, the artist, not the deity in the sky. But you know, it's kind of like, there's definitely three or four songs that if Lord recorded them, they could fit right in on Melodrama, and a couple that could be hit singles for sure. Yeah. I don't know, with the sort of the strangeness of their sound and everything, if that's really what's going to happen with them, but I think they're going to get a lot more fans with this release.
Awesome. Yeah, I just added it to my, it was on my radar and I completely forgot about it. Because I almost bought tickets to their Portland show. I might do that now because I have a feeling.
Yeah, check it out. It's really in. It just reminds me, it gave me some of the feelings I used to get when I would listen to, you know, earlier Gorillaz albums and feel like, you know, they were checking all the boxes in a way with, you know, making kind of intelligent and kind of strange pop music that, you know, was not too crazy that it's going to scare a big audience away, but is, you know, gives you really something to sink your teeth into.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to take a listen. Is it a good cooking album? Because I'm about to cook.
That's a good question. I feel like there's some good cooking tracks on there, but you might start like zoning out a little bit too with some of the, like, towards the second half of the album and like get a little woozy and need to take a break. So I would suggest giving it a trial run before cooking with it. But, you know, if you're cooking something, if the recipe is pretty simple and straightforward, you just go with the first half of the album, see it, which starts off like, if you're ready to kind of like get your blood pumping a little bit and move around a little bit, could be a pretty good choice. So I would say, you know, cook and then eat to the second half.
Okay. Hey, just an interesting tidbit here about this Let's Eat Grandma record. It was produced by Sophie, who you mentioned a few episodes ago, and Ferris Badwan, the lead singer of The Horrors.
That's right. You know, when you were talking about The Horrors earlier on the show, I knew that he had been involved in producing something recently, and I wasn't springing to the top of my mind, and that was it. Yeah. The Sophie record is cool too. One that I haven't been able to like to spend enough time with to know exactly how I feel about it yet, but it's really cool. And also just very strange pop music.
Yeah. Well, with your world traveling and attending music festivals left and right, it makes it a little difficult.
You know, I had a lot of time on the flight back, and I spent a little time with our favorite Italian plumber, Mario, and that really helped a lot. I didn't have a lot of time I did listen to Snail Mail, though, to see if it would put me to sleep on the plane, and it worked. So I want to nominate that into the sleeping on planes shortlist that we've been creating on the show.
Okay, great. Snail Mail, you're up there.
You have to, and you know, this is not about, you know, things that are snooze-worthy. These are albums that, you know, lull you into the kind of the perfect place you need to be when you have just so much trouble getting comfortable.
Exactly.
You know, it's a specific thing. That's why Slow Dive has an incredibly strong songwriting. They're not, it's not like a boring band. Same with Snail Mail. You just have to, you have to have a number of attributes to pull something like that off.
Yeah, this is definitely not a diss on
yeah.
Any band that makes it to the cooking records, the drive, the driving records, or the airplane records, that's not a bad list to be on.
No, those are like guaranteeing rotation, basically.
It's a badge of honors.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So I think, you know, going back to the Gorillaz album, I think we both like it. I think I like it a little more than
you. Yeah, I mean, I would recommend it. And if you like Damon Albarn's music and just kind of go for pretty much whatever he does like I do, then you're going to like it.
That's a good point. You know, I think we've been that horse yet, but yeah, this is, if you're a Gorillaz fan and solely a Gorillaz fan, you might not like it as much as if you're just a Damon Albarn fan.
And I think if it had been released as, you know, Damon Albarn, the Now, the follow-up to Everyday Robots, I think my overall impression would be more enthusiastic, because I think I like it more than that record. And I'd be like, oh, he's like doing something a little different with his follow-up to, you know, it's a little less austere than that and you know, a little more fun. But I think he's playing around with Gorillaz-y tools in terms of the sounds on the album, like the synth sounds and the kind of really pop-oriented, you know, beats that Gorillaz have. So it's like a Damon Albarn solo album, but he's restricted to Gorillaz tools, kind of.
Characters, yeah.
And, yeah. And obviously the character, he's still 2D, but the lyrics seem pretty personal to me. They don't seem quite so cartoony.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Well, Nick, we will talk next week. I want to date this podcast really quickly by telling you, because I don't think anybody's listening right now at this point in the show. LeBron James.
Dude, I was going to do the same thing. I was going to say, I'm going to wait until the end of the fucking episode. We'll turn it off if we start talking basketball again. What the fuck? LeBron James, 4 years at the Lakers.
LeBron James, what? Yeah, he's on the Lakers. I predicted this. You know, I don't know. This is great for his brand. I mean, that's really all there is to it.
Oh my God.
Biggest franchise in basketball or all around the world gets the biggest player. So he's going to be here in town. I'm never going to be able to afford to go to a Lakers game, but
just go see the Clippers play the Lakers.
I was holding out just a little bit of hope that he might join. You know, he's tight with Jerry West, but he's got to be in that purple and gold.
What about, so does that mean Kawhi's done coming? Because PG's in OKC, so.
Unless the Spurs get a better deal, but, you know, we got to see what's going to happen between, I'm ready for the drama, you know, because LeBron brings drama wherever he goes. He's got LaVar Ball and Lonzo already causing drama, pretending to have an injury to tank his trade value so that he wouldn't get traded to the Spurs. The intrigue is all there.
God, I love the NBA.
Yeah, I love
even
it.
When there's no games, this.
So that was a preview of our new NBA podcast, currently untitled. If you're still listening to this, shout out to you. You need to give us a 5-star review right now.
Yeah.
Because you're our only hope.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm in the Lakers.
All right, we'll talk next week.
All right, see you, dude.